This is Mr. Brown. Today we have a very special guest with us, Mr. Bae Yam Keng. Yam Keng, the MP for Tanjung Pagar GRC. Welcome to the show, Mr. Bae.
Hi.
And you're the first MP we've ever had on our show.
I'm honoured.
So MM said we are aiming to be first world, top half of the first world. And I assume then we are the bottom half of the first world. So are we even the first world right now?
Depends on which aspect you're looking at. I think in terms of economic-wise, mm-hmm. I think we can safely say that, or sort of declare or, you know, take pride that we have achieved certain status or levels of living, standard of living, and purchasing power, the lifestyle for most Singaporeans. And the our infrastructure, I think, certainly is first class. I think a lot of people have said that what is more important or what is really lacking now is the software.
What and is the software?
I think the software in terms of people, social graces, our attitude to life, our openness to other things. I think these are areas that, you know, we should be, that we are quite different, I suppose, for the real first world cities.
But when you say we, well, we, who are we? Is it people, or is it the people in power, the government, or, you know, who is not open to what? Where are the gaps?
I would say in general, I mean, of course, as a country, yeah. While we're just 4.5 million people now, there is still a wide range for people with their own views, values here. Whether, you know, even in people in the government, in the parliament, you know, all 84 of us have different growing up backgrounds. We have different views. And but I would say generally, on average, I suppose our outlook or our certain take on certain issues will be quite different from those first world cities.
Okay. Do you think Singaporeans are going to say, like you, you know, Singapore is the best place in Asia to work and to play, as you mentioned in your maiden speech in Parliament? Or are they going to say, die lah, 6.5 million people in a couple of years' time, I'm going to leave already, so crowded. I'm going to find another country that's got more space and more freedoms and better opportunities. Do you think that's going to happen? People leave or people stay?
I think in terms of space, we will never be able to have that luxury. There's no way. But as a place, if you compare now work, live, play, I'll say that Singapore is one of the best places to live in. We do suffer from a bit of wrong perception in the international arena, where people just read about us for the wrong things or the things that doesn't feature us very well.
Okay.
I suppose these are things that just get picked up by international media. So as tourists or potential visitors, they will say, oh, Singapore is a very strict place. There's no freedom. You can't do this. A lot of laws. In fact, when I was living in Europe, I have you know, a European telling me that she's scared of passing through Singapore, Changi Airport, because she said you have a death penalty for drug trafficking. But, I asked, are you a drug trafficker? I said, no, of course not. But what if somebody saboed me, you know, dropped a pack of drugs into my bag? I'll be caught and I'll be hanged in Singapore. But so that is a perception behind it, is that you have a death penalty, therefore, oh, it's very strict and I will never pass through Singapore. So that is what people view. But a lot of people, after coming to Singapore, especially those who have come to work and live, and especially those with families, actually, they really find that Singapore is a superb place to live in and to bring kids up. So I suppose as we move on, I think the other sort of quotient that we should build up would be the play part. I think that's something that you know, I think we are working hard at, and I think it's I think we're seeing some results now.
Okay, but if Singapore is planning to attract, I assume, a lot more foreigners to come in here to make up those numbers. I mean, we are not reproducing ourselves fast enough. You and I are exceptions because we both have 3 kids each. If we are not reproducing ourselves fast enough, and we need to get 6.5 million people, there are going to be a lot of foreigners coming in. The social fabric is going to be stretched. You know, and on top of this, we are already having trouble keeping our Singaporeans from leaving. So if we can't even keep our Singaporeans here, convince them to stay, how are we hoping to attract the foreigners to come here and, you know, set up families and find out for themselves how wonderful Singapore is?
I think, first of all, I think the government has not said that we are targeting to have 6.5 million. I think it's a provision.
Okay.
It's something that I don't think we can, oh, that's it, you know, we have to 6.5 in 5-10 years, therefore every year we need to increase by half, you know, whatever, 1 to 100,000. I think it is the provision of, in terms of planning, that we are able to accommodate if indeed there are this number of people, you know, living in Singapore. And yes, you know, if Singapore, you know, since Singaporeans are not reproducing enough, then we suppose a lot of increase will come from foreigners. I think to each his own.
Mm.
For those who have lived overseas, you will appreciate certain things in Singapore.
Yes.
But at the same time, you realize that certain things can be done in a different way because you see it in other countries. And yeah, that might be better. It may not be the most effective, most efficient, but I can live with it. Mm. And that's fine with me. I there are certain other priorities that I have. So to each will be, it'll be a combination of different factors.
Right.
Whether the combination offered by Singapore, does it suit me and my family and for my future versus another country? I think that's where people have the, I think, choice. For some people, they do have the choice. When they travel, you know, you read, you know about other countries. That's where you can make your own decision. Likewise, I think for foreigners, I think Singapore presents a very viable and livable option for me, many people as well. So I suppose there will be a constant influx and you know, outflow of Singaporeans and foreigners.
See, a friend of mine works in Shanghai, and he was telling me this story. He's a banker, and he was posted there to help set up the office in Shanghai. And one of the stories he told me was that yes, Singapore is valued for its, you know, expertise, English speaking, yada yada yada. But when his contract ends, his boss has told him, very unlikely, we will keep you here. You can go back to Singapore or find another gig, because we are finding, you know, our Shanghai graduates and new hires are picking up the skills needed very rapidly. We can speak English as good as you can. So he was saying, my value add is limited. It's going to end in 9 months. For Singapore to aim to be a bridge between the East and the West, you know, we always talk about ourselves as a bridge. Oh, you know, you've got the West, then you've got China. We can bridge this gap. What happens when the bridge is not needed anymore and faster than we imagine?
Mm.
So where do you think Singapore will be without that bridge if we don't have that role to play?
I think if indeed we lose that ability to play a bridge, we will be in serious trouble if we do not find ourselves a new role to play, you know, in the region or in the world.
So what role do you think we will play?
That's why, you know, Singapore is needs to find new industries to grow.
Mm.
I think new talent to attract, new talent to groom. So the investment in R&D is one area. You know, instead of, you know, we are developing new things ourselves, new technologies, new sciences, so that we can make a living from there. And the spin-off from there in terms of whether it's patents, intellectual property rights, or manufacturing, sales and marketing, I think that is sort of a value chain that you can look at. So this is, I think, one area. And since, I mean, and a lot of things depends on the people you have. So the talent is important. So in terms of investing in education for own people, in terms of attracting good people to Singapore, I think that's what I think will be important for us to sustain and grow the economy and the country further down the road.
I see a huge emphasis on creativity and information, IT. That's one area I think we are pumping a lot of effort into, the government is. Do you think we have the right environment for creating a creative industry? You were director of creative industry in Mika,
yes.
Am I wrong, right? Do we have the right environment? I mean, can we deal with the messiness that comes with attracting creative individuals? We are quite flaky, you know, creative people.
I think
it can get messy.
We need to get messier.
You think?
Yes. I think...
wow, okay.
We can afford to be messier. That's my view.
Okay.
There are certain things that we may have to on the side of not being too conservative. These are, I think, certain risks and chances we have to take. I mean, as a, you know, in my former portfolio, that's something that you know, we like to push for. I think, but for many years, the machinery of Singapore has been running on MNC or traditional industry.
Manufacturing.
Yeah, manufacturing. Very clear, you know, production line. Yeah, employee, employer, you know, you work for salary, you know, fixed hours, shift or whatever. But in the creative industries, it's different. I mean, Oh, I just visited the restroom. I see. I know people live there. The toothbrush.
You noticed the toothbrush?
Yes.
Very alert. So, yes. One of them is mine.
Okay.
I've got soap in there as well. And
yeah. So
soap.
I imagine that your lips live. You know.
Yes.
Sleep. You know. It's like your home.
Yes.
So the working style or the attitude towards work is different now. I think that's where Singapore would have to evolve and change. A lot of our rules, guidelines, and our setup, our system, is geared up for a more established type of economy. But there are newer ways of working, of living, of making money, of keeping one's passion and interest alive. And I think this is where the attitude or the stance of our policies have to change.
But then we're still seeing Madonna's stuff being banned, an art book by a celebrity photographer, a local celebrity photographer, banned.
Well,
I've read the papers. What's the hang up? You know, how are we going to move forward from a tolerant, creative, buzzy place, willing to deal with the mess, if that stuff's still being banned? And you say that, the perceptions overseas are wrong. You know, people have a poor, a wrong perception of Singapore. Only when they come here, they realize how wonderful it is. But how much of that is contributed by our own policies?
Mm. You may have noticed the parliamentary question I asked, actually, recently.
I saw that,
asked the ministry to clarify why that book is banned.
Mm-hmm.
My own take is that the government takes, a cautious approach when there are things that deal with sex, violence, and because different races of our population, different religions of the population, have different, levels of acceptance. And it seems to me that then we are taking the most conservative of all.
But that's not happening with some of the areas. I can watch an MA18 movie like Babel with nudity, frontal, pubic hair can be seen. But I can't read a book that is not even porn, it's an artistic book of celebrities. I can watch. Why can't I have an MA18 book?
So we maybe should introduce classification system for publications.
Maybe, yeah. Whatever it takes.
I think that could be one way ahead, forward. But I think here we also have to understand that the nature of printed material is quite different from something you screen in a cinema.
Really?
I mean, even if you're above 18, you buy something that is maybe not too desirable for minors, the book can be passed around. It's a hard copy that you get. You can easily, nobody's going to check on that. Whereas in the movie, there is you buy a ticket, there's a door. You know, there is someone to check on that you are of the right age, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. So I think there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that, yes, I think as we move on, that could be one way that I hope the government could consider, so that to allow, I suppose, different types of information materials that is made accessible to people in Singapore.
I mean, you yourself said that the government cannot control what people read or watch. Should not. That should be a decision made by the individual. So, this is one area that is not happening. Do you think there's a possibility for you to make that change?
I hope so. I think as a backbencher, I see it as, because it's something quite close to heart, I mean, I'll like to raise it, to surface it, and perhaps give my own take on certain issues so that those in power, the officials making the kind of assessment, would, perhaps take notice of it and be more progressive in the way of assessment. I suppose right now not so much a confusion, but people are saying that sometimes Singapore seems to be quite liberal. Okay, we allow Crazy Horse. Okay.
Mm.
Then the Leslie Key book is banned.
Right.
So people say, is it U-turn? You're being not consistent in the approach. So I don't have an answer to that. I mean, I do agree that, yes, it's true. Good. Seems to be conflicting signals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's nice to know someone else in parliament feels that way.
I mean, actually,
you hear the default answers a lot.
Yeah. In my question, for the Leslie Key book was that, how do we compare ourselves with other global cities? As we, used to compare ourselves with the London, the New York, now we're coming closer to home. You know, the cities like Seoul, like Shanghai, they're all coming up, like Bangkok, they're all coming up as well. So they are our very close competitors now. So when we in our pursuit of wanting to be a global city, how do we compare ourselves with these cities? Because I don't have a confirmed answer now, but understand that the book, for example, is sold in China.
Mm.
So
that's supposed to be a very conservative country.
Well, supposedly, and so are we more conservative than China now?
Wow,
I'm not sure. I mean, yeah, but of course,
by that standard, yeah, we would be
exactly. So, but of course, you know, we also have to bear in mind. Oh, you know, Singapore is a city state. You know, the book is here. Basically, the whole Singapore has it. Whereas in Shanghai, it's different because it's such a huge country. China is such a huge country. You know, Shanghai versus the rural areas, the inland cities. It's a difference. There needs to be a different approach when you're managing a big country versus a city state.
Well,
that can be a reason as well.
Well, you know, Hong Kong is not very, very big. So they don't seem to have that hang up. So I don't know. I mean, could it be we want the creativity and we want the creative industry, but we don't want the mess? We can't deal with the mess. We're not willing to deal with the mess.
I suppose the approach is that we want to manage the mess.
Can you manage the mess? I don't think we can.
I think if we take a different industry, mm-hmm. I suppose the sex industry.
Mm.
Prostitution is actually legal in Singapore.
Oh, that's weird, man. That's like one of the weirdest things in the world. A lot of people pointed out to me.
Yeah,
Amos telling me your country legalizes prostitution.
Exactly. So, but that doesn't mean that Singapore is a city of sleaze or sex sale everywhere. It is, to me, that is actually good management.
Sure.
It's legal. It's managed, and it's a good system of it.
Okay.
So I suppose that's why the government is like, okay, we can also allow casinos or gambling in Singapore. So because there's a sort of social ills associated with it, which we are well aware of,
mm-hmm.
but we think we have confidence that we are able to manage it.
Right. But with creativity, when you manage it, don't you think that kind of stifles a lot of the creativity? I mean, if you spend half your time wondering, looking over your shoulder, whether, you know, am I saying something that will get me in trouble? Isn't that kind of, doesn't that kill creativity very quickly?
That's one school of thought.
Okay.
Another school of thought I heard is that actually, if you know that there's this
boundary.
Box, that a boundary that is supposed to work within, actually, that would actually, stimulate creativity. Because I know, then this is what I can be as creative as I can within this box. And also, I can stretch my creativity, my imagination to test the boundary, to touch the line but not cross the line.
Oh, but
that calls for greater creativity.
Oh, well, yeah, sure. But what if you don't even know where the boundaries are? That's assuming we know the boundaries.
Okay, sure.
Right? If you told me the box, like in this studio we are in, you know, this is the limit that we are supposed to work within. Fine, I can deal with that. But most people do not know where the OB markers lie. Right? It's a moving target. And if you ask anyone, no one's going to tell you.
Yeah.
So how do you even operate creatively if you do not even know what the boundaries are?
Then I think in this way it is how smart you are or how clever you are in knowing what is the maximum or rather how. Okay, I suppose for everyone who's working in the creative sphere, I think we should try to push the boundary.
Okay,
should test it, but do it cleverly.
But what if that gets you in trouble? And then that's the end of your experiment.
I think that's where, as a society, we also need to be more tolerant.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, you may make a mistake here, but that doesn't mean that should be the end of you or your career or whatever. You know, it's just a mistake made, and we should be more tolerant of such mistakes.
Is it society that's not tolerant, or is that some other people who are not tolerant?
I think both.
Yeah? good point.
I think both. Actually, in general, I mean, the more vocal people in our society, to me, is still the minority. There are a lot more people out there who are the silent majority, and I think these are people who are actually slightly more conservative.
Yeah.
So, okay. So I think that's where people in the government have to play a balancing act.
Okay.
You know, it's sometimes you can't be sure. It's a gut feel. So I think, as an MP, I do feel that we can afford, ourselves a little more leeway in this.
You talked about the new media and the old media divide in your maiden speech in Parliament. And then there was a report about the PAP's online counter-insurgency movement. I love that phrase. Of which you're a part of, in a new media subcommittee. Is there a war we are not aware of? You know, how come the use of the word counterinsurgency by the press? Well, I assume that's a term they use. I'm not sure whether that's a term you would use to describe the party's new media strategy. Are the online commenters considered insurgents that need to be corrected or re-educated? Is that the thinking behind it?
My take is that the online media and the offline media, we call it, actually quite two different groups. Whether it's the creators of the content, you know, or the users of this media, they're quite different.
Okay.
And to me, they are just not really balanced. They don't represent the general mood or feel of the society at large. It's quite skewed.
Online?
Yeah,
or both?
Online, both.
Oh,
both.
Online and offline.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so they're both skewed.
Both skewed.
Okay.
And I believe the real world is somewhere in between. You know, it's not all pro-establishment, neither is it all anti-establishment.
But online, I get to see pro-establishment views as well.
Yeah, but minority.
Yes, sir, because you guys are not hanging out there. Yeah. Do you have a blog? Besides the P65?
Yeah, no, I don't have my own personal blog.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? Nobody is saying that nobody's keeping the government out. Yeah. Nobody's keeping the establishment out of the online community. Mm-hmm. Nobody said you're not allowed to come into our world.
Yeah.
So why is it only one view represented? I mean, if there's
but,
a case.
But we don't need to, what I call, does everything needs to be official that, it must be a government
I don't think so.
Blog or
sure.
MP's blog, whatever. Is among almost all Singaporeans, among every Singaporean, you know, there'll be people who are pro and anti as well.
Sure.
Or not necessarily a diehard supporter of the party or
sure.
a diehard opposition, but
just a regular person.
On certain views,
yeah.
on certain issues, you have different views.
Mm-hmm.
I think my feeling is that the views that are sort of anti establishment just get surfaced or get introduced into the new media a lot more prevalently, more obvious on in the new media versus the mainstream media. So, and similarly, you know, in the mainstream media, they tend to take a more objective, but to me also slightly more pro-establishment stance in the way that it's reported.
But surely there are objective but critical views online as well.
I've seen some.
I mean, you know, I've seen quite a number.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, but the sense I get, at least from the forums.
Sure, okay. You're hanging out in the wrong forum.
Maybe,
Must be the wrong forum.
So maybe that's my wrong perception of new media then. So that's why I felt that it seems to be two different worlds. And if someone, you know, especially I think in the young nowadays, the young people seems not to read the mainstream media, not to rely on the mainstream media. And if one just look at new media and that is the impression you get, or the impression I get, is that maybe it's not accurate. Maybe it's, well, first of all, we don't need to what I call paint the true picture of everything or for everything. It depends, even on the new media, it depends on which blogs or forums or, you know, you visit, you can get different views. But it's just that, in general, I feel that it's quite skewed. So I think we should try to make it more balanced. And even in mainstream media as well, there should be some very critical views of the government, of the establishment, you know, of the system, and let one is to let that voice be heard, and also to challenge, I think certain principles and certain ways of thinking as well. I think that would be healthy.
Okay.
Healthier.
You mentioned that the identity is not important in one of you, in that news report about being anonymous posters, and the message is important. It's the message that's important. So you're basically saying it's okay to be anonymous as long as you online, if you write something that is accurate and objective. Do you mean it's okay to be to be anonymous?
My point is that,
because I got in trouble for being anonymous. You know that, right? My, you know, Ms. Vavani from Mika, also where you used to work, said I was anonymous, hiding behind my name. So it's okay to be anonymous now?
Okay, my take is that in the new media, that is the way things are done. Right? You don't have to declare you give IC number when you post something, right?
Mm.
You cannot do that. So we go with, you know, that is how we should respect, I suppose, the rule or the way things are done in whatever platform we engage. So, well, that's my view on that.
Okay, so yeah. Being online and anonymous is because that's the way.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to be, you know, to declare yourself, I'm so and so, whatever, this is up to you. There shouldn't be any hard and fast rule.
So that is acceptable online, but not offline.
I think offline, okay. If in the newspapers, that is editorial, whatever. I think that is. But yeah, you have identity. You're Mr. Brown.
Yeah, but
yeah, I mean, in the online space, I suppose it's more difficult to track down someone who posts a comment somewhere or write somewhere.
Okay.
But in today, I mean, you can easily. You know, the editors will know you, the people. You are not hiding somewhere.
But do you think there is less credible online that people are anonymous? Is that a view that you hold?
Less credible in the sense that you are less accountable. Okay. Certainly. Because you can be there and gone. That's it. You know, nobody can track you down. That's what, I suppose, the new media offers, or you know, that's how it works.
But does that make the view less less valid? I mean, the internet is a very freewheeling place. Everyone can be heard. So you shout louder, someone will shout you down. You say something stupid, someone will say you said something stupid. So that mechanism is in place. And yes, whatever you say is out there already. No one can make you retract it. But in the grand scheme of things, if you're not saying anything valid, you probably won't be given the time of day, because eventually people just tune out and not visit your blog. If you're a blog in the middle of in the forest and no one visits it, then is it really public? I don't know. I mean,
so to me, that's why I meant when I said the message is more important.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't matter whether is it you know Mr. Brown writing this or BM King writing this. It is the content and I suppose the line of argument or how you reason your thoughts, whether is it fair or objective or whatever. You know, do other people buy that?
Okay.
What you write. I think that's most important.
Do you think traditional media can learn from that? Is that something that traditional media should adopt as well, to start becoming, to allow that kind of freedom coming up? After all, when you say it's online, it's also the voice of the people.
Yeah.
It's not, one or two people are vocal.
I think that's where I think people, that's why I mentioned that also people should be able to have to judge for themselves.
Mm.
To be able to tell, you know, the right from wrong, white from black, or even the grey area.
Right.
So it is. Then I think in the online media is even more demanding in that sense,
yes.
Because you can't testify, can't verify, and you just have to read widely enough and to have your own thought process to be able to judge, analyze yourself, and say, okay, should I believe this or should I not trust this source or whatever. So I think, I hope actually, it's maybe a good thing that new media is catching on, you know, especially the young. So I hope maybe that the younger generation will be more discerning as well from what we, and say, okay, I need not trust everything that's online. Maybe versus traditional media, mainstream media, do I trust everything reported in the papers as well? I don't know. So I mean,
they should learn to do that too, right? But we don't get taught that in school.
Yeah, so I think that is a very important part of a person's, I suppose, what do you call, the mind, how you analyze things, and I think that's where people need to be thinking, people.
Let's move on to something else. You came into parliament under the Tanjong Pagar GRC banner. That was headed up by MM Lee Kuan Yew. So when you were told you were assigned to Tanjong Pagar GRC, how did you feel? Did you go like, yes, yes, you know,
no need to campaign, yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not sure. No.
No, first of all, my immediate reaction was, I think it's a great honor.
Okay.
I mean, really, to be.
Okay.
I mean, of course, I know there will be the same team.
Definitely.
But do I think that, that's it, you'll be a walkover, I'll be guaranteed a seat in the parliament?
Quite la.
Maybe, I don't know, but even, no, even if you, like, if Ang Mo Kio was also challenged, doesn't mean that you get an easy way through, you know, a true passage into parliament. It's not. I don't think we can, in politics, nothing is
of course, yeah. But like 99.9999%. Because
but on the other side, people are also challenging or say that, so you're not tested. You're not, you know, no baptism of fire.
Right.
So are you sure you're fit to be our MP to do the job?
Right.
Then I suppose versus someone, a new MP who has gone through the elections, campaigning, I need to show more or to do more,
right,
to convince my voters that I can do a job and I should get the vote next time.
Right. Well, thank you very much for coming onto our show, Yam Keng. And we look forward to talking to you again in another time.
Sure.
It was really, really good talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is Mr. Brown saying thanks for listening. See ya.